The last shar of the Or HaTzadikim, it took us, I think, 20 weeks or so. So here we are at the end of the Sefer. So the last shar is the shar Yiras Shemayim, which is not by accident, because the very beginning of the Sefer, in the introduction, the author told us that all midos, everything depends on Yiras Shemayim, our relationship with Hashem. You can't have good midos unless you have a relationship with Hashem. So we're going to explain exactly what it means to have Yiras Shemayim and how one does acquire Yiras Shemayim. And he's going to do it in a very fascinating, kind of like windy way, and will hopefully come out with an understanding at the end of the day. The Pasuk in Devarim says, Be'ata Yisrael, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mimach. Now, the Jewish people, what does Hashem want of you? Ki'im li'yiras Hashem Elokecha, to have a sense of Yira, a sense of awe of Hashem. And that kind of lays it out, right? The Torah is very clear. Yeah, what does Hashem want me to do here? What am I supposed to do in this world? The answer is to have Yiras Shemayim. That's our role here in this world. The Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Amid Bey says, Ein la kadosh baruch hu balamo ala Yiras Shemayim levad. Hashem, the only thing that Hashem values in this world is that we should have Yiras Shemayim. We have to explain what that is in a moment. But without Yiras Hashem, a person will have nothing. His Torah will be forgotten. Everything hinges upon Yiras Shemayim. It is the most valuable thing that a person can have, is their sense of their relationship with Hashem. And therefore, we should do whatever we can to get as much Yira as possible. A person's Torah learning will not help them unless you have Yiras Shemayim. You can learn all the Torah in the world, but if you lack that key relationship with Hashem, it's not going to get you anywhere. Rav Chaim Freelander, who is Rav Dessler's Talmud, writes in the Sifsei Chaim that the more Yiras Shemayim a person has, then the purer your Torah will be. It won't be like colored with your like opinions or like your societal views of things, and it won't like have like a bent attitude towards it. The more Yiras Hashem you have, the more pure and perfect your Torah learning will be. So ask me, what does it mean to have Yiras Hashem, Yiras Shemayim? So the Or HaTzadikim says there are three levels of Yira. Okay, we're going to go from the lowest to the highest. The lowest level of Yiras Shemayim is one, or year in general, is a person who has year of people, but not Hashem. Meaning you only do the right thing when people are around. Right? When people are around, you make brachos. When no one is around, you don't make brachos. When people are around, you daven. When no one is around, you don't daven. When people are around, you behave a certain way. And when they're gone, you act the way you want to. So that is the lowest level. I mean, there's something to it. Better to do something sometimes than no times. But that's a very low level. The next level, says the Or HaTzadikim, is Yira Sa'onesh, the year of punishment, where a person keeps Torah Mitzvos and does all the right things, but why? He doesn't want to get a patch from Hashem. He doesn't want to go to Ganim. He wants to go to Gan Eden. And that's why he does the right things. And this is good, says the Or HaTzadikim, that there is a level for that, and we shouldn't downplay that, but that is not the Ikar of Odus Hashem. That's not the highest level. You're really acting for yourself and your own well-being. Again, it's an important level because most people can't appreciate the highest level we're going to talk about. The Torah speaks about this lower level all the time. The Torah is full of reward and punishment, right? If you do this, then the rain will happen, you'll be successful. If you don't do this, then there'll be terrible things. The Torah speaks to us on that level. We have to be motivated. If the Torah were to speak to us on a very lofty level, then it wouldn't speak to us, right? If Hashem was saying, oh, you should, you know, keep the Torah Mitzvot because it'll be good for you spiritually and it'll make you feel warm and fuzzy and make you feel happy. That's not how people think. We want reward. We want punishment. It's how we think as human beings. You know, a little child, you know, let's say I wanted a child to do something, right? I wanted a little kid to do something for me, so I tried to bribe. So I said, you know, if you go and, you know, go to the doctor and you get your shot or whatever it is, so then, you know, we'll give you a car and a house. So the kids are looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, it's so beyond his world of what he appreciates that, like, what type of a reward is that? It's not on his level. So the same thing with us. Hashem's not going to speak to us in the Torah about things that are way beyond most people. He's going to speak to us the way we think. If you do a good job, you're going to have parnasa, and you're going to have what you need. If you don't do a good job and miss us, you're going to have not things. You're not going to have things that you need. He speaks to us where we're holding in our lifetime. You know? The child needs to be shown something that isn't even motivated by. Kid needs to be shown candy, a toy, something like that. And that's the same thing to us and the Torah. So say, what about, you know, we're told in Pirkei Avos we have to serve Hashem Shelo al menas lekal pras. Right? We're supposed to serve Hashem, not for a reward, right? So the Or Yahel explains that knowing the reward doesn't mean necessarily that you are doing it for the reward. The Torah speaks to us, if you do the right things, this will happen. Okay, does that mean that's why I'm doing it? Not necessarily. But the Torah, should, it's okay to know at least what you're going to get at the end of the day. Yeah.
I never understood when they said, like, don't do something for a reward. Because isn't a reward, like, something that, like, brings you closer to God? Like,
well, the argument is that it's bringing you closer to the reward. Meaning, I'm doing it so I can get that reward.
But the reward is closest with Hashem.
Good. Like, so that's a...
That's
correct.
The ultimate
100%. So that is okay. That's okay. In that level, that's okay. Meaning, would you do the mitzvah even if you didn't get Gan Eden? That's the question. But inherently, it's the right thing to do. Again, there's nothing wrong with that level. And most people are holding there. But we want to talk tonight about a level that's a bit higher than that. And that is what the Bali Mitzvah are called, Yiras Haromimus, the awe of Hashem, not because we're going to get a pash, but because Hashem is incredible. We're in awe. We are just overcome by our relationship with Him. And this is the highest level of Avodas Hashem. It's the level of serving Hashem l'shma. We're going to do the mitzvahs because we want to have a relationship with Hashem.
I feel like that's more like a homage to
Hashem. So not in the sense that I'm doing it because I love Hashem. I'm doing it because, well, let me give you an example. Okay? Let's say it's my anniversary, and I knock on the door of my house, and I'm about to come inside. I could have used this mushroom before in class, I don't remember. I'm about to knock on the door and come inside. And as I knock on the door, I remember that it's my anniversary. Okay? And I have nothing to show for it. Okay? Not a card, not flowers, nothing to show for it. So, as I have that sinking feeling in my stomach, right, of having messed up, so there's two ways that a person could react to that or feel negative about it. You feel negative. We all agree that you're going to feel not so good about that. But there's two ways you're going to react. If the marriage is in such a way where the feeling is that, if I don't have something nice to celebrate or recognize our anniversary, then, I'm going to be sleeping on a couch tonight, or, she's not going to talk to me, or something like that. My wife's not going to want to talk to me. So that is certainly appropriate that I should feel bad, but that's what we call yiras ha'onesh. The relationship is such that I'm afraid of the consequences to me, right? Yiras haromimus is that I feel bad because I love my wife very much. And if I mess up and do something to hurt our relationship, I feel bad that I'm not, living up to what I should be in the relationship. And I'm in such awe of her, and I respect her so much, that I feel bad that I have done something that damaged that relationship. That's Yiras Haromimus, but now just apply that to Hashem. Okay? I did the wrong thing. I don't do anything because I respect Hashem so much, and Hashem does so much for me that I don't want to mess up that relationship. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then he brings a mashal. And essentially, the rest of the Orcha Sadikim is going to be about our neshama. He's going to talk about the role of the neshama and what the neshama is and what it does and how we're supposed to function with it. And we're going to take a long trip. It's going to seem like we're getting very, very far away from what we're trying to accomplish tonight, but we're going to see we're going to come all the way back around. Okay? And he says, in order to attain this level, you have to understand your neshama. And he makes the following statement. He says, it's like the mashal of a king who had a son. And the son was taken to a faraway land and raised in the house of a villager who taught him how to be a villager and didn't remember any of his time of being the son of a king or growing up in a lot of wealth and power. And after some time, he had grown up, someone came over to him and said, hey, you're the king's son. So he was a bit shocked. And he said, what do you mean? He said, yeah, you're the son of the king. He sent you away. You're not by his palace anymore, but you're the king's son. So he felt nice about that, but like he had no shaychus to his father or didn't know the king of where and didn't really understand what was going on. He felt nice, but like, it didn't really make him feel that great. And later, more news came from the king telling that he was his father and the king of which country and where he lived and all about his father. And he felt even nicer. He felt better than before. More pride. More excited about where he came from. And nevertheless, it wasn't total because, you know, I'm not there. I'm not with my father. And no one really knows who I am. They're not going to recognize me. So it's very nice that I know I'm the king's son. But I'm still out here, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And nobody really knows who I am. And then after this, the king heard where his son was. And he sent members of his household who knew, you know, to identify whether this was his son, maybe a certain like beauty mark or something like that, in order to pick up whether this was the son or not. And they sent him with the nobles and clothing to dress him as the royal son. And when the messengers came to him, they saw and recognized him. They showed him his royal garments, where he came from. They told him more about his father. He became very proud. And then they dressed him. And they put him on the king's horse. And everybody knew who he was, and they gave him all this kavod. He was exceedingly proud, and he felt really special and very attached to his father. So too, says the Aruch HaTzadikim, with the neshama. The neshama is the daughter of the melech. Our neshama comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It comes to us from the Kisei HaKavod, directly from Hashem, and it's put into this world in the physical body. And this physical body desires Olam Hazeh and physical things and all the things we have in this world. And now, before the neshama is aware that it's connected to Hashem, it goes after gashmias and food and pursues all these things that are not spiritual. But then we teach the neshama where you come from. You come from the Kisei HaKavod, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem created the sun and the moon, and how everything works together in this world, and you come from this great creator. And they tell the neshama she comes from the same one who created all these powerful things in the world. And the neshama feels more and more holy. And then they teach the neshama about the secrets of Hashem's unity and how special HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, the secrets of the neshama. And then, says Yoruch HaSadikim, the neshama clothes herself in the royal garments and enters into the Sod HaYira, the level of having Yiras Hashem, and this is the highest level. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to teach our neshama about where it comes from and how special our neshama is, and that will lead us towards Yiras Hashem. And if a person can think of Yir in this fashion, and the Gvur, the power of Hashem, will come to Yiras Shemayim. And he says that the Jewish people have a special role in having Yiras Hashem. We're supposed to represent the Torah, what the Torah is supposed to be, and Talmud Torah, and Kiyum HaMitzvos. So certainly, one way, says Yoruch HaSadikim, is where you get Yiras Hashem, Yiras Shemayim, is to learn Torah. The more you learn Torah, the more you come to know Hashem, the more you come to see His greatness, it will lead a person to Yira. But there's another way we're going to discuss the rest of the night is, and that is learning about the neshama. So let's learn about the neshama. He says the nefesh, the inside of a person's body is made up of three parts. The nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama. Now tonight we're going to learn these three concepts according to the Aruch HaTzadikim. This is not agreed upon by everybody, but tonight we're learning the Aruch HaTzadikim, so we're going to learn his way. He says the ruach, the nefesh of a person corresponds to the taiva. Your nefesh wants physical things in this world. The ruach inside of you corresponds to emotions. Person has gaiva, kavod, you know, emotional things that they look out for. And the neshama is the place of the intellect, the part of the body that wants to connect to Ruchnias and Kadosh Baruch Hu. The ruach and the nefesh want to control us by pursuing taiva and kavod and all these things. And the neshama fights with Ruchnias to want intellectual growth and spirituality. And there's this constant fight. The Ramchal writes in the Derech Hashem, there must be a fight. There must be milchama between your Yetzer HaTov and Yetzer HaRa. There's no other way. There's no like taking a rest and saying, I'm tired of fighting Yetzer HaRa. I'm going to take off next week. There is always a constant milchama at all times. That's what the Ramchal says. Now, when the Ruach and the Nefesh are winning, then what happens to the Neshama? It gets weak. And our spirituality, our intellect grows weak. When the Neshama is winning, then the Taiva and the Kavod of the Ruach and the Nefesh, that gets weak. And this balance is going back and forth. And eventually, when a person dies, the Neshama lives on. But if the Ruach and the Nefesh, the pursuit for physical things, for Kavod, was more powerful in its lifetime, then the person's Neshama may not live on. Because the Neshama won't have the strength to make it to the next world. But if the Neshama is stronger, then the Ruach and the Nefesh will die, and the Neshama will make it to the next world. There's always this battle between the Ruach and the Nefesh versus the Neshama.
What does it mean when you say it won't be able to go like on?
It could be that a person's neshama, if it's not able to conquer it, it will be cut off. And it won't make it, that's karis. And eventually the neshama won't make it to the next world.
So what happens if you die? And
that's it. Yeah.
Not just from things that could be karis, but other things also.
It would have to be, according to Ruach HaTzaddik, it would have to be a person who lives a life where it's the nefesh and the ruach are so dominant, they're totally consumed by taiva for physical things and for kavod and gaiva and things like that, that it essentially like knocks out the neshama. We're talking about a very, very, very bad person.
I find that you could do teshuva though for
karis. Yeah, but if you don't though, we're saying the person doesn't. Okay? The neshama represents the intellect, the chachma of a person. And with chachma, our wisdom, we build inventions, we advance in science, we create cures and make vaccines, we launch armies, we create governments, we run the world. Human intellect is amazing, what we've accomplished in the last few thousand years. It's amazing. Every single year, new inventions changing the world again and again. The chachma of a man is quite amazing. It can comprehend the most complicated ideas, understand lofty spiritual concepts, even though it's based in the physical lower body. And now all that chachma comes from the neshama. So why would Hashem give us a neshama and an intellect with such amazing capabilities? So we can learn and understand with our mind how to serve Hashem with a lev shalem. If we understand how great the neshama is, so why would we want our guf to rule the neshama, right? If we appreciated what our neshama was and what our neshama can accomplish, of course we want our neshama to rule our guf. But people don't appreciate what the neshama is. So they follow their physical pursuits while their neshama gets ruined. But if we understood what a neshama was and what could it accomplish, then we would certainly want it had to rule the body. So, you know, if you look in the, we're not going to get into it right now, but if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Lamed Aleph 231, the Shulchan Aruch goes on and on and on about how to control the neshama. He talks about not getting too much hana in this world, knowing Hashem in everything you do when it comes to eating and to drinking, how you conduct yourself, everything trying to enhance the neshama. Meaning, the question the person should always be asking is this good for my neshama? That's the question. The question we always know is, I have a choice in front of us. I can go here or go there. What's going to be good for my neshama? Am I feeding my neshama with this choice, or am I feeding my guf with this choice? That's the question we want to ask ourselves at all time. Okay? When we think about the human body, which is not really any better than an animal, like what makes your body better than a bear's? Like, you know, they're all functioning the same way. Why would the rest of the universe be here to serve the guf, right? It can't be that the whole purpose of in this world is to serve the guf. Because what makes you any different than any other animal? He has a guf also. What you have is a neshama that the animal doesn't have. It must be that everything Hashem gives us to serve us is meant to serve the neshama, the intellect, not the guf. Heaven and earth are here for the neshama. When a person comes to this stage, you have to think, who am I that Shemayim v'aretz, that heaven and earth were created for me? Just think about that for a second, right? The whole world is created for you. Created for what? For you to eat? That's what it was created for? The whole world is created so you could do what? Watch YouTube? That was the whole purpose of the whole world? No. Obviously, why would the whole world be created for something that an animal also has? An animal can also eat. An animal can also watch YouTube. It's no difference. It must be that the whole world is created for something that separates you from the animal world, and that's your neshama. The neshama is here for us to subjugate ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to come close to Him. If it wasn't for the Torah, which is the way we purify and perfect the neshama, what would be the purpose of this world? It can't be that the world is only for our physical bodies. It can't be. It doesn't make any sense. If Hashem has given us such spiritual and intellectual gift in this world, then certainly if we maintain our emunah and keep this path, we'll be rewarded in Olam Haba. Another indication about the neshama, you know how people always want more of things, right? A person wants to make more money, to have more accomplishments, to have more positions, to have more power, right? We always want more, more, more. So the Aruch HaTzaddikim says, why do we always want more? Because the neshama is pushing us to want more of something. It wants to be higher. It wants to, you know, accomplish greater things, to be on a higher level. And he says, this is actually why man walks upright. We walk on 2 feet with the body up. Why? Because the neshama is pushing us upward. You know, animals walk on all fours parallel towards the ground. Okay? But we walk upwards. The Maharal writes about this. The Maharal says, in our bodies, the brain, the intellect is at the top. Right? But on animals, it's all on same level. The brain and the intestines and everything else is all across the bottom. They walk on all fours. But human beings walk with the head up. The Mepharshim talk about birds. Birds kind of also walk on up, but it's more birds are bent, right? It's not in this straight, you know, as a straight as a rod position that human beings have. The position that Hashem created us in speaks to the elevated status of the intellect, the neshama, looking upwards to accomplish more.
But wouldn't that be your nefesh? Because it's like for kavod reasons?
What's for kavod
reasons? That you always want and want and want.
Good, good, good. The neshama is bursting to go somewhere. It just wants more of something. So either you're going to mischannel it and misuse it and fill it with kavod and gaiva and haughtiness and things like that, or you'll take that same desire and fill it for lofty spiritual pursuits and holy things. Okay?
It can't go together.
No. It can't. There's always a melchama. Either you're going to be fulfilling your neshama or you're going to be fulfilling your guf. Now, a person, obviously, we have to eat. Right? We have to sleep. But that's all going to be done in the service of what's going to help our neshama. I'm going to eat because I'm going to be able to have energy to be able to work on my neshama. I'm going to sleep so I can have energy to do what I need to do. Yeah. That's true, but it always has to be in the process for that spiritual thing. Meaning,
I think that has to do with like your intention, right?
Yeah, 100%. Depends why you're doing it. But also it will manifest the way you do it. It's hard for me to say that a person who goes out 6 nights a week for a steak dinner and dessert is going every single night to feed themselves, to have their neshama to to grow. Again, we can sit and talk about like the intention all day long, but like at some point you have to be honest with yourself. Like steak with a side of fries and a chocolate cake every single night doesn't seem to be really fulfilling the body, so it can pursue spiritual things. The actions will speak towards, meaning you'll see the actions are going to speak towards what.
But like,
the mind is there.
Why is that in like the same like category? Like, who cares? Like, okay, someone needs a steak. Like, what does that have? Like, that's not me eating a steak 6 times a week. Is not physically helping me learn more Torah or like do more.
Correct. It's not. That's my point.
But it's why I'm doing it.
Meaning, that's my point. Meaning, a person can't say, you know, I'm eating dinner tonight, but it's going to be, you know, lavish gourmet meals with 5 courses every single night and like desserts, and say, and then say, I'm doing this all so my body can be sustained, so I can work on my neshama. What?
Oh, but let's say I do say that.
Well, then you could say it, but is that the reality? Meaning,
right.
Is that the reality? Is that, are you feeding?
It's not leading you to do like, no, you're not doing anything wrong.
Correct. You're not doing anything wrong. Correct. But are you feeding? Are you taking actions that improve the neshama?
Yeah.
Because if not, again, there's always in this area. There's nothing that's parav. It's either you're feeding the neshama or you're feeding the guf. That's the only way.
Let's say like, let's say when you work out.
When he's saying that everything's very hard for someone,
So the Orach HaTzaddikim then says, well, then what's the role of the Yetzer Hara in all this? How does the Yetzer Hara fit into all this? So he says it's to test us intellectually to see if we know what is good or what is evil. In addition, the Yetzer Hara gives us a drive to accomplish things, right? If a person doesn't have a Yetzer to want to conquer and want to do and want to build and want to, you know, do things in life, then you're going to sit back and not do anything. So the Yetzer Hara, says the Orach HaTzaddikim, is meant to be channeled. They often use the mushal of the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov are not necessarily bad and evil. I think we have this very Christian concept of like little angel on this side, like little devil on this side, like from Tom and Jerry, right, telling us like what to do. So that's not the case according to the Orach HaTzaddikim and many of the Bali Musar. They view the Yetzer Hara as like a giant. The Yetzer Hara is your power, your drive to do. But it's like a big, dumb, blind giant. That if it's left unchecked, it'll knock stuff over and, you know, break the chairs and just like make a mess of everything. And the Yetzer HaTov is very smart, very, very keen, intellectual, always on point. But the problem is very weak. It doesn't have a lot of strength to itself. So if I take the small, weak, very smart man and I put him on top of the big, you know, dumb, blind giant, then he can control him. Kind of like, I'm like ride him like a horse, kind of. He can, you know, direct him where to go, tell him what to do. So we talk about the Yetzer Hara controlling the Yetzer HaTov, controlling the Yetzer Hara. It means I'm taking the neshama, I'm taking the intellectual, the brilliant part of who I am, and I'm placing it upon the Yetzer Hara, and I'm guiding my desires and my feelings to go and to accomplish and to conquer and to do and to consume in the right direction. Okay? You understand the mashal? Okay. So then the Or HaTzadikim goes on this amazing, amazing tour. And he talks about the human being is an olam katan, a small world, a representation of the entire world inside your body. Listen to what he has to say. It's quite remarkable. He says, the neshama comes from above, from the Kisei HaKavod, and the guf holds the neshama like the entire world holds Hashem Shechina. Right? Your body is the world, and it has a piece of the neshama. The physical world is a place where Hashem rests. The neshama is a chelak elokai b'mal, it's a portion of Hashem, that creates the olam katan, and the guf is the world itself. And it's because of this, he says, that people like Moshe, Eliyahu HaNavi, were able to control the world with miracles, to open up, you know, holes in the ground for Korach to fall into. Or Eliyahu HaNavi was able to be Mechai Mason to bring people back from the dead. People who follow the Ratzon Hashem and do the mitzvahs are given tremendous ability to impact the world and the Olamos HaYonu, the upper realms. When we keep the Torah, we become more and more familiar to similar to Hashem on a smaller scale. When you keep the mitzvahs, you become more and more and more godlike. And your actions are able to impact the world, just like Hashem changes the world. And we have understanding, we build the world, our neshama can't be seen, we can know the future with Ruach HaKodesh. There's a lot of similarities between our neshama and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? We can't see our neshama, we can't see Hashem. The neshama is housed in our bodies, Hashem, so to speak, is housed in this world. And then he goes on to explain that humans are an olam katan, a small world in the physical sense as well. He shows that the physical structure of a person matches the physical structure of our world. Now, some of his biological and physiological comparisons do not match up to what we know for science nowadays. So we're not going to get into those things right now. They don't exactly match up what we know about the human body. But he has a bunch of beautiful ideas. He says, the natural world, there are animals that are peaceful and good-natured. And there are also animals that are jerks and mean and do terrible things. And so, too, there are plants that give refuah and health and nurture the world. And there are plants that are not nice, that have thorns and have poisonous and can kill people. And so, too, there are human beings who are nice and wonderful and helpful. And there are human beings who are poisonous and terrible, like certain types of animals and certain types of plants. Inside and beneath the earth, it's dark and damp, with creatures swarming around. And so too inside the body. It's dark, it's damp, there's microbes, there's germs inside the body. There's structure and rock layers beneath the earth. And so too there's bone structure that holds up mankind. There are streams of water and aquifers beneath the surface of the earth. And there's a bladder and a urinary tract that carries our fluids around the body as well. In Tehillim it says, Tahom el Tahom korei. That the depths to the depths of the earth speak to one another. Literally, meaning like, you know, what's underneath the ground in China communicates is connected somewhere to what's underneath the ground, you know, in Brazil. There's all the whole underneath the world is connected. So says Yerucha Sadikim, so too, the different parts of the human body also speak to one another, right? The brain is talking with the heart, and the heart is communicating to what's going on in the bladder, and the bladder is talking to the foot. All the different parts of the body communicate, just like the depths of the earth communicate to one another. There are rivers and there are waterways that connect all of the bodies of the world, right? That connect oceans and streams and canals and things like that. And there are arteries that connect the blood all over the body. There are salty and sweet waters in different parts of the world. And the body has different liquids as well that it secretes in different places. There's hot and there's cold winds in the world, if it's hot or cold. And when we breathe out, there's warm air. And when we blow out, there's cold air, just like warm winds and cold winds. There's thunder in the world. There's the voice of man. There's constellations that people can read in order to predict the future and know what's going to be by reading the stars. And he goes on to explain that we lost this chachma, we lost this wisdom, but there was a wisdom at some point where you could read people's features, their palms, their face, and know their future, what will be with them at some point as well. Just like we could read the constellations, so we could read people as well. There are trees that are very hard and very, you know, brittle, and there are soft woods that bend, and there are plants that bend. So too, there are bones of the body that are very hard, and there's cartilage that's very soft that bends as well. There are hard rocks that are made to crush things, and we have teeth that are made to crush things. He says there are some trees and grass that produce fruit, and there are some that don't. There are people able to produce children, and some people who unfortunately are not able to. There are some parts of the ground that produce grass, and others that don't. There are some men who can grow hair, and some men who go bald, he says, who don't have the ability to do that. And then he says there are 365 days on the calendar, and there are 365 sinews in the human body. So he says, we are, in so many ways, an olam katan. Such a beautiful description. He shows not just like a nice idea, we're all a small world, Hashem has created the world for us. No. Literally, you are a physical manifestation of the entire world. Whatever the rest of the world has, you have in miniature inside your body. And so too, just like the world has a Kadosh Baruch Hu, inside your body is a neshama as well. You are a miniature of the entire world in every single way. So we've seen that just like there was a Maisa Bereishis and a Maisa Merkava, a creation of the world, and a lofty intellectual, Kabbalistic, mystical ideas, there's a miniature form of these inside every single human being. And that's why we're called the Olam Katan. And he says, because our bodies match this universe, we have the neshama, which represents Hashem in this world. And says in Tehillim, Barchi Nafshi, Es Hashem. The neshama blesses Hashem. Why is the neshama that blesses Hashem? So the Gemara explains that the neshama and Hashem are connected and alike. The neshama, Hashem fills the world. The neshama fills our body. The Hashem doesn't eat anything. The neshama doesn't eat anything. The Hashem sustains the world. The neshama sustains our body. The neshama is singular. You only have one neshama. There's only also Hashem Echad. There's one Hashem. The Hashem is pure. Your neshama is pure. The neshama sees, but it cannot be seen. Hashem also sees, but it cannot be seen. And the neshama never changes, and Hashem never changes. These descriptions apply to Hashem and the neshama. And therefore, it's the neshama that says, Barchi Nafshi Es Hashem. The neshama is a unique understanding of Hashem that the rest of the world doesn't have. So now we're going to come back. Why is this all in the Shaar Yerushalayim? So he says, when the neshama reflects on everything that we have just said, and you really sit and contemplate the amazing world we have, the amazing human body that Hashem has given us, how small we are within the cosmos and the constellations, but really how impactful and powerful our neshama is, then immediately we have a sense of anava, of humility and yira. How could you not have yiras haromimus if you sit for a few minutes and think about how incredible Hashem is, how incredible the human body is, and Hashem gave this all to us? That's yiras haromimus. That's an awe and a fear of Hashem because we contemplate how amazing Hashem is and everything He's given us. Think about where we came from. Hashem created us. What we're made of, the complicated makeup of the human anatomy, the human eye, all the parts that go into the human eye to make it work, and the brain and the sinews and the synapses that are running through our body. It's an amazing, amazing thing. The Romulus, the godless of Hashem, the miracle of the human body, how He lived inside a womb for 9 months and then came out essentially pretty much disabled, unable to really see or do anything. And Hashem allowed us to grow up and to become fully functioning human beings. And if we were to ponder all of this and ask, who did all of this for us? Who arranged all of this for us in our lifetime in the world? And we think about all that goes into our gufar and neshama, says the Orach HaTzaddikim, of course you'll have Yiras Shamayim. How could you not have Yiras Haromimus when you meditate and think about all these incredible things? Rav Avigdor Miller was a big fan of writing about these things, in his books or his recordings, things like that. He often talks about, you know, like the egg and the chicken's egg, how complicated it does, and everything is self-contained. Or an apple, you know, inside one apple seed contains all of the DNA that's necessary to grow thousands of apples for the rest of the lifetime of that apple tree. All inside the little tiny seed. That's amazing. That's an incredible thing. But if you think about all these things, the neshama and the guf, and what Hashem does for us, and you as a human being in the context of the entire world, so says Yerucha Tzadikim, that's how a person gets to Yerus Hashem, Yerus Shemayim, and gets to that high level of Yerus HaRomimus, that you are on this level that a person thinks, I don't want to do an Avera. Do you know what Hashem has done for me? Do you know what Hashem does for me in my lifetime? Of course I want to do a mitzvah. Hashem raises us up and gives me this amazing world, this inspiring life, this incredible opportunity. Of course I want to do the right thing. That, says Yerus HaTzadikim, is Yerus HaRomimus. Now, this is not in the original edition of Yerus HaTzadikim, but in the standard printings, he says, and this is what it says in Koheles, Sof Davar HaKol Nishma, at the end of the day, what's everything about? Es Elokim Yerah, Yes Mitzvosav Shamor, you have to have Yerus Hashem, do his mitzvos, Kizeh Kol HaAdam. Because that's what being a person is about. That's all you need to know, Yerus Shamayim, and to do the mitzvos. Okay? That's it. That's Yerus HaTzadikim. Mazel tov.
Mazel tov.